it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome to the Cut to the Race podcast. I am your host again, James. We're without Ollie again, unfortunately. But as ever, Sam and Abby are here. And we're going to talk about the Las Vegas Grand Prix. I'll ask, firstly, of course, as ever, how you both are. Sam, Abby. Sam, you go first.
I'm good, thank you, James. I'm not using my studies today, so I'm holding my microphone in my hand. So I apologise for any interference there. But otherwise, I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. No complaints. Abby, how about you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I finished some of my Christmas shopping this morning, so it's been a productive day.
So efficient. It's like a month and a half. I don't acknowledge Christmas until my birthday's gone, which is the 27th of November. So the 28th of November is the first day of Christmas.
You share a birthday with my mum.
I think we may have established this a year ago.
Maybe,
and
yeah.
Cyber Monday.
I mean, yeah. I know it's fallen on Black Friday before as well, which has been good and bad, yeah. I think, because people going and buying presents literally on the day. But anyway, we're not here to talk about this. My more important question than how you are, not that that isn't important, I care about you very much, but is, are you guys excited for the Las Vegas Grand Prix? And I started with Sam on the previous, so Abby, I'll start with you on that one.
Kind of.
Okay.
I feel like it's been built up to be this amazing extravaganza in Vegas along the strip, and everyone's like, oh my god, we're gonna race near Caesar's Palace and everything. But I feel like it can either go one of two ways. It'll either be amazing, or it'll just be really underwhelming and not very good. And as we get on with this podcast, you'll understand why I'm not too happy about what Formula One in Vegas has meant for the city. But yeah.
Yeah. I think it could very easily fall in the middle as well. I know what you're saying. I think it could be. I mean, I'm kind of torn in, like, part of me would say it can't possibly not be overhyped. Like, the way that it's been led into, the way that F1 have spoken about it for a year plus. But so many on social media are so against it. And every time you go into the comment section of anything that has mentioned the Vegas Grand Prix in the last 12 months, most of the top comments are angry, or, you know, saying it's going to be rubbish, the track's rubbish, whatever else, that it kind of almost can't be underhyped at the same time. So I have no real idea how it's going to turn out in terms of, yeah, living up to the hype. Sam, what do you think?
Well, this, you know, therein lies the issue for F1, is that they've hyped it so much that they have to deliver. That it now can't be a dud. It has to be a really, really good event. And also, because of how much they've overhyped it, that is what is generating the detractors online. If they weren't so like, oh, we're going to Vegas, this, that, and the other, people wouldn't so kind of, you know, passionately push back against it. So I think that's where the issue lies for F1. And yeah, as I said, I think it has to be an absolute success now that F1 has put so much time, effort, and money into the marketing side of it, let alone the rest of the weekend. So for me personally, I can't say I'm excited. I'm intrigued to see what happens.
Yeah.
it'll be interesting to see what the racing is like. We'll get into some of the factors that will affect that. But it'll also be interesting to see what the atmosphere is like around F1 and around Vegas at that time. Because I was in Vegas, what, end of September? And I spoke to a few people. Cab drivers were like, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. They were like, I'm not looking forward to it. People aren't happy about it. So, yeah, we'll have to see. Because I think the experience you get from home, the experience that you get attending the race, and I think the experience that you get from being a resident of Las Vegas are all going to be very, very different and distinct things.
Yeah. Intrigued is an excellent word, I think. And that is, I think what I would, it would boil down to me, for me as well. I mean, obviously what is always going to play the biggest part, you'd say, in the quality of a race is the track layout. So let's start there. Let's start with the basics. And to draw upon our usual way of doing things in the race reviews, in this race preview, I want a rating out of 10 for, on paper, the layout from each of you. Abby, you first.
I would say a 10 out of 10 because it's an upside down cow. That's how it looks. If you look on the F1 site, it's an upside down cow.
So I thought it looked more like an upside down pig, but I mean, I feel like we're splitting hairs here.
But no, I think it can be very interesting because 17 corners, 50 laps, there are quite a few very long straights. Sam and I were just talking before this, and from turn 16 to 17 to then turn 1, it's kind of one whole straight with a little kink in the middle. We said that the drivers will probably be flat out there. And I think it'll be very interesting in terms of how the tyres perform on the circuit. But yeah, so upside down cow, 10 out of 10, more realistically as a rating. 7 out of 10.
Oh, we're falling Goodman there. 7?
Go on, Sam.
For me, I'm going to give it a 5. I think it looks distinctly average. I think if things go well, if some of the things that we talk about in a minute with regards to tyres turn out to be not as big an issue as some people are predicting, you know, some would argue that drivers or analysts are scaremongering when they're talking about the tyres and temperatures we're expecting in Vegas, which is ultimately a desert, which has a high diurnal temperature range, which is temperature range between night and day because it's a desert. So it gets very cold at night, believe it or not. Thank you. If those issues don't come to pass, it could be almost Baku-esque, I think. If you look at the layout, it's a street circuit, you could get some of the chaos there, which people love. That's a Marmite factor in itself.
Yeah.
However, you could end up getting a 2016 or a 2023 Baku, in the sense that I think when it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah, it could definitely go that way. I think if you guys have been pretty high in the ratings there compared to, again, it's, you know, the angriest voices tend to get shouted the loudest. But the naysayers online, it would have you believe it's a 1 out of 10. I think I will go like a 4.5 maybe. I think it's a bit below average on the McKenzie scale. I think it's a little bit, yeah, unimaginative, but obviously they could only do what they could do with the space that is around the strip. I think they bought a chunk of land, is that right, for where the paddock will be. So that's going to be, I think, an interesting first few corners. If you look at it, it's a very tight hairpin into a kind of sweeping right-hander after what is, it's hard to get a sense of scale because it's such a long straight, but it looks quite a short start-finish straight.
Yeah.
Straight into a tight hairpin, and you don't really see that often for first corners.
It could end up being quite clumsy because...
Yeah, 20 cars.
Then exactly, so the Constantini effect, because there's not going to be much speed going into that corner.
Yeah.
So they're going to be almost tiptoeing around each other, clumsily kind of like all nudging each other a little bit. So it could be quite interesting. Also, people online are talking about the pit exit and how it feeds back onto the track through the kind of exit of the first corner. people are worried that it feeds right onto the racing line. I don't think it will. I think the cars that are not coming out of the pits will be wider. So I don't think it's as bad as people are maybe suggesting, but check it out on social media. Formula Nerds, we've tweeted about it. Our Twitter guy was you know, questioning whether or not it would be an issue. So take a look there. Sorry, our X guy. It could be a bit chaotic at the start. Also, Abby, just a quick question, slightly off-piste. Upside down cow, would that in theory then make a ooh noise?
That was not the question I expected you to ask.
I don't even know.
It just, you know, you have those intrusive thoughts and you're just like, I just have to ask.
Clearly.
I think it would clearly... Question. I think it would clearly make the sound that those, you know, those tubes that are supposed to sound like a cow would make. That's an upside down cow, if anything, I think. More important, I would also add beluga whale into the very important conversation about what this track looks like. It's definitely got a fin at the back. And anyway, something else that could cause chaos, particularly at that first corner, will be the temperatures. You know, we're talking about it being clumsy. It'll be clumsy as hell if they are trying to do this on what could be, 5 degrees track temperature. It's somewhat unknown territory for F1, this. And it's probably what I'm most excited / intrigued, to use that word again, about coming into the weekend. Because I've always said, like, oh, why have we never had a Finnish Grand Prix, you know, with... The amount of heritage in drivers, and it's always like, oh, it'll be too
cold. Most drivers finish Grand Prix.
Oh my God, what are these dad jokes about? I'm the dad. it's always been like, oh, it's too cold in Finland most of the time, and I've always thought, oh, that would be such an interesting curveball, and now we've kind of got it. The lowest recorded temperature at a Grand Prix, I believe, was, I saw this during the week, Canadian Grand Prix 70s, yeah. 78,
yeah, I think, yeah. 5 degrees.
I thought I saw 6 because I remember them talking about this one being 5. But either way, splitting hairs again, it's going to be, it would appear, around about those temperatures. And we had the Eiffel Grand Prix, the Nürburgring 2020, was very cold, but they're on wet tyres, which are, you know, a totally different prospect to dry tyres. So what are you guys expecting from the temperature above all?
A few surprises. I think our Twitter admin, ex-admin, whatever you want to call it, posted about the weather.
Oh, he
over
still
the
is
weekend.
The admin.
No, I meant ex or Twitter.
I'm sorry, I'll stop.
Awful.
He posted
it's
about
like,
the weather.
You're holding the mic and now you think you're like a stand-up.
I think it's actually that, isn't it? It's that effect.
And he said FP1 and FP2 are looking to be interesting because the Thursday and Friday, it does look like there could be some rain during those sessions, not during the Grand Prix. But I do think whatever happens, it will be interesting and maybe exciting to watch because it will be so cold, 4 or 5 degrees, which, as you guys said, is not the usual temperatures that F1 race in. I mean, Sao Paulo... The most recent race was a very hot weekend, so it will be completely different. And I think I saw somewhere that Lando Norris was practicing something to like warm up his hands for driving to make sure that he can still grip the steering wheel. Because obviously in those temperatures, you can't have your hands numbing or whatever because it's so cold and you are driving a race car. But I think it will be interesting and cause chaos, or more chaos than the hairpin.
Well, this is where you get a kind of compound effect, not tyre compound, but tyres do come into it. Sorry, I'm starting to annoy myself, so I'm going to try and stop. But we've talked about the layout, we've talked about the tyres, and now the weather as well. Those factors all together is what could make it particularly disastrous in terms of being able to prep the tyres, in terms of how to get a hot lap off, and also the start of the race or when you're coming out of the pits. So the layout, lots of straights, very few fast corners, or very few corners where there seems to be a real kind of opportunity for tyres to generate heat, or that you're really using the tyres, a lot of load going through them. So that... That could be quite difficult, or at least those load-bearing corners coming at the end of a straight where you've lost your temperature and you're just going to career into the wall. So that's going to cause a problem. We've already talked about the temperature. And as Abby, as you say, if you bring weather into it, changing conditions, it could be really, really tricky, which does pose an opportunity. You start to see the kids and the adults of the field, who's really good at handling those situations and who isn't quite up to the standards of the others around them.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Firstly, well done on resisting the urge to make a pun about hot lap in the cold temperatures. I'm proud of you.
It did cross my mind.
But secondly, yeah, I, you know what? I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see the cars weaving down the straight throughout the race, which would be, I think, one of those things that will go down in folklore if it happens. Just like you say, so little opportunity on such a cold surface to get the tyres heated. I think seeing them weave down the strip would be like social media.
Like. Yeah. Because the whole thing is that, oh, when we go, you know, 200 miles an hour down there, kind of, and obviously they'll still be going quick. But surely, if they're all weaving, you're increasing the likelihood that one of them's going to get it wrong and end up
putting it in George Russell. Yeah.
Yeah. Or putting it into one of their competitors.
Well, we will have to wait and see. I think that's pretty much everything covered on track. We'll be back in a minute to talk about the off track side of things. Well, yeah, obviously it's going to have a big impact in terms of the racing, we hope, but it's certainly had an impact on the people of Las Vegas and on F1 fans who want to go to this Grand Prix. And it's hard to know where to start. Let's start with, the F1 fans, the race goers, and what they've experienced. So the big talking point recently and in the last day or two has been the ticket prices, because they are dropping like a stone. Abby, do you have the stats, the numbers for us?
Well, I saw somewhere that initially an average ticket was $7,000, which, you know, is like more than triple what I'd pay to go on holiday abroad.
It's crazy.
But now you can apparently get a 3-day ticket for $1,000 or under. And then hotel prices have now fallen to around $200, $300. So initially, sky high. But now, less than, like, or just over a week away from the race, they have fallen immensely.
And I mentioned at the top of the show that I was in Vegas a couple of months ago. In terms of hotel room prices, that's not far off what I was paying in late September, $200 a night for a room. And I think we stayed at the New York. So not a super, super affordable hotel compared to some of the others that are slightly further outside the strip. I mean, we don't need to go too far into the mechanisms of supply and demand, but when you're a week out from a race and the prices are dropping for tickets, I don't know. Feels to me like you've got something pretty badly wrong there when anticipating what people are willing to pay.
Well, that has been the kind of how it's seen online. I think it's not too rare in these kind of big events. They will go big early, and you know where there's that demand of, oh yeah, we need to make sure we get to the Vegas Grand Prix, and using all, you know, the people who maybe are less likely to be able to afford it later, falling back in the queue, it's natural for it to reduce a bit, because they you know, it's supply and demand. It's just selling as high as you can for as long as you can, and then you go, okay, well let's sell off the last few. But the other side of that coin would be, quite often they are sellouts in other parts of the world when they're more reasonably priced. The stats I saw were the cheapest available ticket, which, now, I can't say for sure whether this is October or August, because it's 10/8, which could be American datings or English. But let's say a couple of months ago on average, the Thursday, the cheapest ticket was $385. Friday was $825. Saturday was $1,600. And now It's down to 162 on the Thursday, so down 60%. About the same on Friday, which is down to 300. Saturday is down to about a grand, which is down 34%. And hotel prices have dropped on average 58%, which is a lot.
I take your point, James, about you expect there, you know, often to be a little bit of a drop off. But often, you know, there's a steady ramp up of as the tickets become more scarce. And if you've judged it correctly from the start, they wouldn't be in this situation. Given that they are basically rivaling Monaco for the kind of the glamour, it's that type of fan they're looking at. They're not trying to attract the people that go to the Belgian Grand Prix in camp, right? Who,
yeah,
everyday fans, you know, us. They are attracting social media influencers, the rich and famous, the people who want to be seen in those environments. Those who are going to buy paddock passes. Now, they've got 5-day paddock passes for this event. I've been to Grand Prix. I can't even think about what they're doing on Thursday. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
They're selling them. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, they've misjudged it. They've misjudged the attitude and the atmosphere around the race. And at the British Grand Prix, though, some of the heads of certain hotels or the marketing in certain hotels, some of the big ones, Bellagio, Caesar Palace, etc., were saying that they were trying to make it as affordable as possible for the everyday fan. And this is when we're talking about rooms potentially being $5,000 a night. And you're like, yeah, affordable to who? And that's what I mean about this Monaco kind of clientele. It is the rich and famous that they are catering for. It is going, and F1 has been heavily leaning into that, expecting that. You can see it from the marketing. So it's, yeah, they weren't anticipating, I don't think, being in this position a week out.
Well, that's how it's affected the race goers. Now, how about the Vegas residents? Now, Sam, you're obviously there, like you said, but I think we've all seen online a few of the people. Yeah, the dissenters, if you will, who are kind of pointing out, like, look, they've ripped up these trees. They have taken away this fountain or this, you know, pool, I think it may have been. And little things like the obsession with blocking off the view of the track. Abby, is this a kind of necessary evil, do you think? Or is this going a bit too far?
I get that it's a street circuit and it's on the strip and it's supposed to be this extravagant race and F1 is the elite of motorsport and it is supposed to be temporary. But when you do see these reports online of people living in Vegas going, we can no longer see the Las Vegas Sphere from the bridge because they've put a film over all the pedestrian bridges, so we can't see anything. And it's tourists who are there for a few days or citizens of the city, and these are iconic landmarks that F1 has either like removed the water from the Venetian to build grandstands, or they've removed the trees and that. And I don't know whether this is all true. These are just reports on social media, but it does make you question F1 being in Vegas, because if these are supposed to be iconic landmarks, but they're no longer what they once were because F1 have had to construct around them, remove them temporarily, and that it doesn't sit right with me, because then it's not Vegas. It just, I don't know, it doesn't seem like Vegas when they're removing the Vegas.
It's a long time that it's been in the build up, I think. And I guess this obviously happens to some extent to Monaco, but I think they've got it down to such a fine art probably, and it's smaller scale in every sense, that they probably, you know, the Monaco residents will accept that for 1 week a year, it's chaos, and then it goes back to normal. Whereas this has been months in the making.
Yeah, and also the Monaco Grand Prix is very, very closely kind of you know, sewn into the tapestry of Monte Carlo and Monaco generally, right? That is one of the reasons why it's famous. It's the event every year for that city. And yeah, you say it's now fine art. They open the streets and the roads in between sessions that are used for the actual track. You know, it's a very well-oiled machine. That clearly isn't the case that's going on in Vegas at the moment. When I was there, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, you couldn't see the Bellagio fountains properly from the street because of all the infrastructure that was starting to be built. Abby, you're absolutely right about the pedestrian bridges. The film, that, I mean, that wasn't there at the time, but people are starting to rip that off. You know, it feels a little bit like F1 has gone outside of its remit and will outstay its welcome in Vegas, because people are just going to be like, yeah, you're adding surcharges to every single, or surcharges are being added to every single taxi journey. They're charging what, X amount for restaurants to be open on the strip where these restaurants have always been and are there all year round. And they're like, oh, well, we don't want you seeing our race. It's like, you're the one who decided to come here. You know, we didn't, yeah. We were already here. I can't change the way that my the restaurant looks out onto the strip. You know, like it's all those little things like that, that it's just, it feels a little bit entitled.
It boils down to the fact that, yeah, F1 needs Vegas more than Vegas needs F1, really. And it's like, well, exactly, it's the opposite, yeah, way around.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Vegas has its very unique identity outside of Formula One. And F1, I think, has overstated its hand in understanding that, and that wasn't a Vegas pun, it hasn't truly understood its place within this. It's a cool event, but I think it was kind of, it's a cool event for like 4 or 5 days, not weeks at a time.
Yeah.
Exactly. And with the restaurant thing, there are reports that Formula One has actually bought specific tables in restaurants so no one can sit there because they're close to the track or they look out onto the track. And with Monaco, yes, F1, the Monaco Grand Prix, is a part of the country's history, but you don't have to be having a ticket to watch F1. You can be in a hotel out on the balcony that overlooks the track, and you can still watch it. But in Vegas, they've put so many different obstacles in the way to try and obscure the view. And yeah, Sam, what you said about people ripping away the film on like the pedestrian bridges and glasses and that, I've seen videos of people doing that because they then can't see like the Las Vegas Sphere. They're there on holiday, they want to see an iconic landmark, but they can't because they can't see out of the bridge.
Yeah, and they're there 3 weeks before the Grand Prix and don't care about F1. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was wondering, like, oh, maybe this kind of thing happens in Monaco. We don't hear about it because it's not so newsworthy, but I don't think it does. I mean, I know the company my girlfriend used to work for, the CEO had an apartment in Monaco and a yacht, and it overlooked the first corner. And, you know, you could stand in his apartment and just look down at the track. And I don't think they're doing anything like that with, you know, blocking off windows and buying out tables at restaurants. But we could talk about this all day, I think, but we should probably leave it there. And so we will leave with two predictions. I'm going to ask you both one word, just a winner, just one name, and then one hot take for the Vegas Grand Prix. One sentence only. Limited. Don't ramble. I'm looking at you, Sam. More than Abby, with the greatest respect.
Whoa, I don't know what you're talking about.
Go on, Abby, you go first. Winner and hot take.
That's really difficult. Ferrari as the winner. And the hot take, half the cars will crash out.
The first corner. That is a hot take, and that makes up you hedging your bets by going for a team rather than a driver, which I will allow, because it's still one word. You didn't break the rules.
See?
It was, yeah, clever. You know, thinking outside the box. I like
it. Thank
you, Sam.
Winner, Lando Norris. Oh, sorry, Norris.
Can't help himself.
Hot take. And this is maybe slightly me shoehorning this in, but the suits that they've put, as in suits from a deck of cards that they've put on the curbs, will actually pose a bit of a visual problem for the drivers. It'll be distracting.
Yeah, I like that.
And they'll complain about it.
I can see it happening. Okay, I will go winner, Perez, hot take, Verstappen to crash out.
Yes, yeah, I think that'll happen. Something's given me Max won't win this.
Yeah. We said that before Singapore. Obviously, there was, you know, reason to think that, but who knows? Maybe we'll get at least one more.
That's why you want Perez. It's the street circuit king, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or the street king.
Oh, God, that's just not...
Well, we'll see who is the king of Vegas in about a week's time, and we'll be back to talk about it then. Until then, we might be back before then. We'll see if there's anything worth talking about in the interim. If not, then we'll speak to you then. Sam, Abby, thank you so much for joining me, and we will all see you at the most in just over a week's time to talk about the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.